Now we're holding on Nun Zayin Omud Beis, 8 lines from the bottom. 9 lines, actually. We look at a Mishnah, Nafal the Din of Ananis. We said if an animal fell into somebody's garden, so we said either the ground slopes away from the main road, or the road is on top of a cliff, whatever the case, the point is that the animal fell in there, it didn't go in there deliberately. The Ananis, and it enjoyed, it had Hana from what happened in the garden, which we're going to see now. What kind of Hana are we talking about? Mishalemus Mashananis, we said she, or rather the owner of the animal, pays according to the Hana, not the full value of what it damaged. Tosfos, by the way, points out over here that we have to be talking about, now we've learned previously about the concept of Tchilasi B'Kshiya B'Sofa B'Onis, when you have, to begin with, the owner acted carelessly, and then in the end it turns out that the actual damage was caused by an onus that was beyond his control. Now, in this case, the falling in is beyond his control, but Tosfos points out, if the animal was capable of getting in there normally, then it would be Tchilasi B'Kshiya, because the owner should have been more careful walking around there letting his animal walk around there to make sure that it can't go in. And then, according to the opinion, which is the halacha, Tchilasi B'Kshiya V'Sofa B'Onis Chayev, then he would in fact be Chayev for the whole thing. That's how Tosfos says. On the other hand, the Rashba disagrees with that and says that, come on, you know, what are you expecting him to use an expression from earlier in the Masechta? Are we talking about, are we expecting him to walk along holding the animal by the tail the whole time to make sure that it doesn't go in someplace? No, so you can't really call it Kshiya. So according to the Rashba, in other words, it wouldn't make a difference whether the animal could have gone in there normally or not. The fact is, in this case, it actually fell in. So what do we mean by the nets? So Omar Rav, the nechta. Rav says what we mean is that there was an impact over there. It gained from the fact that instead of falling on the bare ground and it could have gotten injured or killed, instead it fell on a pile of fruit or a pile of grain or what have you, and that cushioned its fall. So now what we're saying is the owner pays not according to the value, not according to the full value of the produce that was damaged, but rather according to the hana that would be basically, in other words, like how much would he have been willing to pay, or how much would an average person be willing to pay for something like that, but there should be a cushioning there to cushion its fall. So the Gemara says, Aval Ochla, Aval Ochla. So the Gemara asks, or maybe it's saying that as a statement, Aval Ochla, but so you're telling me if the animal ate from what was in the garden, Afilo Mashananis Enim Shalemis, is Rav saying that you wouldn't even pay Mashananis? Because that's the implication. Rav is saying that, Rav seems to be saying that only when we're talking about the only kind of nanis for which the owner has to pay, apparently, is the nanis of falling onto the, is of falling onto the produce. So it sounds like if it ate the produce, he'd be completely potter. Well, Lema Rav L'Taimei, does that mean that we should say that Rav is following his own svara that we've learned earlier, Da'amar Rav, Hoyal Oshalai Tofal. We had an example back in the fourth parak, we had an example where somebody brought his payrus into somebody else's, fifth parak actually, whatever, somebody brought his payrus into somebody else's property, and an animal ate from those payrus and got sick. And we said that the rabbit said, you can't hold the person responsible for the damage to the payrus because the animal didn't have to eat them. So are we saying the same thing over here, that the so what are we saying? The owner of the animal would say, the fact that the animal fell in, you can't hold me responsible for that, that's an onus. So I would argue then that even as far as the eating, that was also part of the onus. So is that what Rav is saying? And in fact, he's potter completely in that case. So they answered back, no. Hochi hashta, how are you comparing the two cases? Sure, Rav is saying over there that the animal should have not eaten. That would apply where the animal itself got injured by the eating. So what we said, to be exact, the case was, so Reuven brought his payrus into Shimon's chotzer, and Shimon's ox ate from those payrus. So we said, actually, there were two possibilities. We said that Shimon's ox was injured by those payers. So Rabban said it was injured in the sense that it slipped on them. But if it ate them, then Reuven, who brought the payers in, would be potter because he can say to Shimon, however, the Gemara is saying it's not comparable. There we're talking about hecha de itzikahi. They were talking about where the animal was injured. Demotzi omale mori de peiri lo mishalamna. So now the owner of the payers, Reuven, has every right to say, I shouldn't have to pay for the damage to your animal because it's not that I brought in my payers, fine. And if your animal had slipped on them, I'd be chayev for them. But the fact that the animal ate them and therefore got a stomachache because of that, that's not my problem. I shouldn't have to pay for that. But over here, so there he can argue he shouldn't, the animal didn't have to eat. But la'azuki hi achrini diptidol shalumi mi'amar. Where would you ever find that you could say the animal caused hezek to somebody else, and you would say that you're potter from paying? So obviously. And Paris, he doesn't mean only in that case is he chayev, and in the case where it ate, he'd be potter. What he means is one of those needless to say things.
Could you repeat all this because you were silenced for about a half a minute?
Sorry, I don't know what happened over there, but okay. So to recap, we were saying that you have the case that we had previously where Reuven brought his payers into Shimon's chotzer and Shimon's shur ate from them. So we said that, Rabban said, if Shimon's shur had slipped on them, then Reuven would be chayev because he brought in his payers without reshus. But if Shimon's ox ate from them and got sick, then Reuven is potter because he can say, Hoyo Losh Loy Teichel. So first, the Gemara is thinking it means the same thing over here. That here, Rav is saying only if the animal fell on the payers are we making the owner of the animal pay, and we're not making him pay the full amount, only mashananis. But it sounds like we're saying that if the animal ate from the payers, he should be potter on the grounds of Hoyo Losh Loy Teichel. The question is, though, how does that work? If on the face of it, Hoyo Losh Loy Teichel doesn't give a right for the animal to cause hezek to somebody else and be able to get away with it. Maximum we can say is that where the animal is the one that ate it, and the animal doesn't belong to you. It ate your payers, then you and got a stomachache, then you can say, Hoyo Losh Loy Teichel, it shouldn't have eaten my payers, and I shouldn't be held responsible for that. But not the other way around. Here, where if the owner of the animal trying to get away with that, that shouldn't work. So Ella Loimid Boyakov. Rather, we have to understand Rav differently. It's one of those needless to say things. Rav doesn't mean that only when it fell on the payers is the owner paying only mashananis, and when it ate the payers, he's not paying anything at all. Rav rather is saying both of them. Loimid Boyakov, the Mshalemis mashananis. Needless to say, if the animal ate from the payers, then the owner is paying according to the Hana of it. Because after all, now this is similar to what we had back earlier in the Masechta, where an animal eats in Rishos Rabim, and we say you don't have to pay Mashi Hizika, you don't have to pay the full value of the damage, but you still have to pay Mashi Nanis, you still have to pay according to the value of the enjoyment of the animal, namely that you, the owner of the animal, are gaining from the fact that now you don't have to feed it next time. So needless to say, if it ate, then you would have to pay that. But the chiddush would be where the animal fell on the ground over there and would have gotten injured if it hadn't been for the payers. Ema, you might think maybe there's a reason to patter the owner of the animal from having to pay for anything at all, because we can call it mavriach ali minichse chaveri. We can call it that the owner of the property, the owner of the garden, is metaphorically causing a lion, chasing away a lion from somebody else's nechassim. Meaning, in other words, imagine you have a case that you see a lion about to attack somebody else's property, and you have a mitzvah to scare off that lion and save a fellow yid's property. The same way over here, you could argue the owner of the garden, his pile of payers over there saved this animal from serious injury or even being killed. Maybe you should say, therefore, that he's doing a mitzvah and he doesn't necessarily have to get paid for that. The Shach on Shulchan Aruch explains the Svara is, in other words, the Chachamim, to figure out, the Chachamim to evaluate, since he's accomplishing a mitzvah, then we don't expect that he needs to get rewarded for it. So therefore, you would have thought that maybe that's the case, and maybe therefore he's not entitled to schar. So the Ravid understands it somewhat differently. Because he has a mitzvah to save a fellow yid's property, therefore that's a, he has a mitzvah too, and therefore we can't say that he ought to get schar for doing that mitzvah. Whatever. Anyway, we would have thought that. So therefore, the owner of the animal shouldn't even have to pay for mash and nanis, because he can say to the other guy, you accomplished a mitzvah by saving my animal. Kamash Malan. Therefore, Rav is telling us that no, nevertheless, he does still have to pay. He has to pay mash and nanis, but he doesn't get away with it completely. So the Gemara says, "Be'ema hochinami." Well, maybe Taka. Rav is saying that we don't consider it mavriachari, and therefore the owner of the animal does have to pay. But why, indeed? Maybe indeed, Rav should say that it's considered mavriachari, and he should be potter. Why indeed are we not saying that? And why indeed are we saying that the owner of the animal has to pay? The answer is mavriachari minichaveri midaitehu. The difference is when a person does that, when he sees a lion or some other danger menacing somebody else's property, and he saves it, he's doing it midaita. So according to the Shach Svara, then the vort is that since he's doing it midaita, then he's doing it specifically for the mitzvah, not to get a reward. And according to the Ravid's way of looking at it, the vort would be that. Not only when it's midaita, when he knows that he's doing that to help a fellow yid, then he's obligated to do that. Where it's just his mama and is helping that without him being involved, without him being there, then he doesn't necessarily have such a chiyuv. He doesn't have a chiyuv to put his mama in harm's way in order to save somebody else's. So that's the difference. But over here, when the animal fell into his garden, it wasn't midaita. He had a pile of payrus over there. He wasn't there to see what's going on. So that's one way of understanding. Inami, or another way you could understand the distinction, mavriya harim nichsechaveri less like seva. The difference is, when you're scaring away a lion that was about to attack somebody else's property, you're not suffering any loss, any monetary loss in that regard. High is like Seda, whereas over here, he is having a monetary loss, after all, because his payers have gotten squashed and damaged. Therefore, there is reason to be, there is reason to say that you can't patter the owner of the animal and him get away with saying, Mavriya Harim and Nichse Haveri, that you did a mitzvah and that you were required to do it, or you didn't do it for the sake of Schar or whatever, because the fact is, here he actually had a hefsin. Tosfos actually points out that really the Gemara, these two answers of Gemara are not really contradicting each other. It's not like you have one answer, or if you don't like it, I'll give you a different answer. Really, both of them work together. You need both of them in order for it to be considered mavriya harim and nichse chaveiroi. It has to be midaita, and it has to be that there's no that the other guy is not suffering a hefsid. And Tosfos goes on to discuss in great detail about all of that, about the parameters of this whole concept of Mavriya Harim and Nichse Chaveri, some of which we're going to discuss towards the end of the Masechta. So that's one point is, in other words, we're going to discuss some cases over there where one of them is saving somebody else's property, but he himself is suffering a loss in that connection, and therefore he's entitled to reimbursement for his loss. And Tosfos goes on to discuss this in great detail. Then Tosfos, by the way, goes on to discuss further on a very interesting point. This matter of Mavriya Harim and Nichse Chaveri also comes into play with certain things going on between Jews and Goy. So Tosfos discusses a case that Rabbeinu Gershom brings in, Rabbeinu Gershom Ora Goyla brings in his Truva, where there was a Goy had illegally taken over a Yid's house. And then another yid came and bought it from the goy, so that would be an example of Mavriya Harim and Nichse Chaveri. On the other hand, it's not, because again, the second yid did spend money on the house, therefore he is entitled to reimbursement if the first guy wants his house back. And Tosfos discusses that there would be a machlokas rishonim about that, that Rashi may disagree with that. In that connection, incidentally, Tosfos also brings another interesting point, another interesting historical curiosity about things going on between Jews and Goyim. Between Jews and Goyim, Tosfos points out you have a case where Jews run away from a city for whatever reason. We could imagine any number of reasons, pogroms or plagues or who knows what. Anyway, and the Goyish ruler takes over their property. where the Jews are not the, it's not the kind of property where they're obligated to pay him taxes on. If they were obligated to pay taxes, then yeah, he'd have a legitimate reason to take it over because of the unpaid taxes, but here you don't have that. Or where somebody else is paying the taxes on his behalf. Considered jinnin mahusa because it's not a known legal principle that you should be able to do that, to be able to just take over property that a yid that the owner left town. And Tosfos mentions in this connection that Tosfos mentions in connection with the country of Burgundy. Tosfos mentions Burgundia, they call it, which is Burgundy, which is nowadays part of France. Back then it was an independent kingdom. Anyway, he mentions the same thing. For example, you had Jews who were going there and who were sometimes going out on missions to work as knights or different things like that. Interesting notion that you have Jewish knights, but apparently Tosfos is saying such things existed, and the rulers over there don't take over their land, so therefore in other countries they don't have the right to do that either. Yunida Mahusa only applies, Tosfos is saying, only when you have a generally accepted principle of law that's done in many other countries, not like this, where one particular ruler comes up with this notion that he should be able to take over any abandoned property where he doesn't have a financial claim on it because of taxes or whatever. That's not considered dina de mahusa, and therefore if another yid buys it from them, it's considered like he's buying from a gazlan, and the same rules apply. He does have to return it to the original owner. However, the original owner does have to reimburse him for what he paid for it. Not really directly related to our Gemara, but a couple of interesting tidbits over here about Jewish life in those times and places. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, the point is, in this case, it's not Mavriya Hari Minich Sechadei, right?
By that standard of logic, the U.S. should give back all the lands that they stole from the Indians.
Well, maybe also, yeah, we're not going to start getting into that. No. You know what? The Rambam actually talks about, we actually had it in Shlosh HaPrakim of Rambam the last couple of days. It is a generally accepted principle that when a king, or in this case a democratic government or whatever, conquers land, that they are entitled to keep it. Nowadays, of course, you have, very conveniently with Israel, they try to claim not so, but in general, it was always accepted as a general principle of law in all times and all places that when a government conquers land, then they're entitled to keep it, and it becomes state property, and they can do what they want with it. So therefore, no.
Even if the land was occupied by another country.
Yeah, even if the land was occupied by others, that's how war works. Yeah, yeah. The laws of war allow for such things. Yeah. Anyway. The point is, over here, getting back to the Gemara, so what Tosfos is saying over here, it has to be a principle that's generally applied in many different places. It can't be that one kingdom or one local count or whatever comes up with his own interpretation of the law. In this case, for example, to say that a yid owned property and he doesn't owe any back taxes on it or whatever, that they should be entitled to take it away from him because he ran away, doesn't work that way. Anyway, the point is, getting back to the Gemara, the point is that there is a concept called Mavriya Hari Menich Sechaveroi, and where he's not required to pay. However, this is not like that either, because of the Shaloi Midaitoi of the owner of the field, or because the owner of the field actually suffered a financial loss by having his payers squashed. Okay. So all of this is one explanation. So that's it. So that's Rav's explanation of what the nanus was of our Mishnah. We don't mean that the animal went in there and just started eating. We meant that the animal fell in there, and nevertheless, the owner of the animal is chayav to pay for the nanus, for the fact that for the enjoyment that it had, that it fell on something soft rather than on the hard ground. Okay. The next question is, Hefi Nachal, exactly how did this animal fall into the garden? So here we have a machlokes. Rav Kahana amar shehuchal kav meimei raglayo. Rav Kahana says the animal slipped on its own urine. So it was walking in Urshas Rabim and it slipped on its urine. That's something that's complete oinus. You can't expect that the owner of the animal should have had any idea that such a thing would happen. It's not only urine that Amam and Pirush HaMishnayis and also in Yad HaChazaka, Guns instead, it could just as well be if the animal tripped over a walk. The point is it's something completely unexpected. Rava Amar Shechafata Chavata. Rava says, no, what we mean is that another animal that the person had, a bunch of his animals, walking by over there, and one of them pushed the other. So, why do we have two opinions? Manda Amar Shechafata Chavata, Rava, who says that it's talking about when another animal pushed it, Rava would say, all the more so if it slipped on its own urine or on a rock or whatever, for sure that would be considered an oinus. But according to Rav Kahana, that we're talking about only when it slipped on something, such as its meir aglayim, that would only be, he says, only in that case would it be considered an oinus. But if another animal pushed it, then no, he says that rabbi called posha, that would be considered a pshia on behalf, on the owner of the animal or on whoever he entrusted the animals to, and therefore the owner of the animal would actually have to pay the entire damage, not just mashanenis, the amalei, because the owner of the garden can tell him, iboilach avuri chada chada, you should have taken the animals by one, and like this, you took a bunch of them together, and that made it possible for one of them to push the other, and therefore you should be chayev for that. A couple of interesting things in that connection. First of all, a couple of mafarshim point out, earlier in the Masechta, we discussed cases where an animal falls off a roof, and it's considered an oinus. Why are we here? All of a sudden, are we calling it, is our kahana calling it a pshia? A couple of answers, our Tosfos that Amir Peretz gives an answer that there we're talking about by day, and here we're talking about by night. By night, there's much more of a chance that an animal might slip, and therefore you have to be much more careful. And Rav Kahana is saying that in that case, then if you didn't take that extra care, then you would be chayav. Whereas there we're talking about by day, where it's less likely for an animal to fall. The Rav Issa Zalman gives a Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer, the famous Rosh Hashiva, gives a different answer. He says that there we're talking about the animal standing still. Here we're talking about the animals are walking. When they're walking, they're much more likely to slip and fall, and therefore Rav Kahana considers that you have to take that extra care. The Maharshal does point out, he says, listen, I mean, you obviously have to be talking about that the animals are walking fairly close to the edge of the garden, that there's a chance that if one of them pushes the other, it'll fall in. Obviously, if they're walking much further away, then one of them pushes it so hard that it falls in, then even Rav Kahana would have to agree that that's considered an oinus. So that's the machlokes. Now, the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Kahana. Now, Rav Kahana further says that. Maybe it's not further. The truth is, you have a whole bunch of different Rav Kahanas in Shas. It's very possible that the Rav Kahana we just had now arguing with Rava is not the same one that we're now going to have arguing with Rav Yechanan, especially Rava and Rav Yechanan were a couple of generations apart. Anyway, Amar Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana, whichever one it is, says Lo Shanu Ela Ba'Osa Aruga. When we talk about that, we're saying that the owner of the animal is potter for what the animal ate in that garden, that would only be ela ba'osa aruga, only if it was and so now what we said at the top of the Amud, we said if the animal ate there, then mishalemis mashanenis, and we said the chidush of Rav is that even the animal fell in there and fell on Paris, then also mishalemis mashanenis. You shouldn't think he's potter. So obviously we are talking about when it ate in that garden. So Rav Kahana says, when are we saying, lo shonu, when are we saying that you're only paying for the hana, ela ba'osa aruga, only when the animal is eating in that particular plot that it fell into. Meaning, so therefore what we say is, there was an oinus of the falling in the first place, and in effect, what you really have is there's kind of an oinus of the animal eating there as black roll. It's instinctively going to go eat what it's on top of. So therefore, if the onus, if the falling is considered an onus, so is the eating of the payrus as well. And you can't hold the owner responsible, the owner of the animal responsible for the full amount. Mashizika. Avo, but Rav Kahana says, me aruga la aruga. If the animal then started walking around in there and going from one plot to another, meshalemis mashizika, then the owner would have to pay according to the hezek, because then already that's not considered a total onus. Once the animal is in there, then you, the owner, have a responsibility to get it out of there. The Rosh explains, we're talking about where you know that the animal was there and you could have gotten it out and you didn't. So, obviously, if not, then the same onus the Rosh says would still apply throughout. Tosfos also points out there's the fact when it fell into a particular plot. Now we have, after all, the Torah says the shilachas be'iroi, a person sends his animal, a person lets his animal loose, uvir v'sdei acher, and he eats in somebody else's field. So now he didn't let his animal loose because it fell in there, and that's for onus. Now, when the Kahana is saying, if it goes into a different plot in the same field, then it's already v'sdei acher, and then you can hold him responsible for that. And again, as the Rosh says, we're talking about when he knows that the animal was there and he didn't take steps to take it out of there. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan says, no, afilo ma'aruga la'aruga, ba'afilo koloyim kuloy. No, even if the animal goes from one plot to another and keeps on eating, nevertheless, we're still going to say that the owner pays only mashananis, only according to the value of the hana, meaning, in other words, again, as we learned back in the second parak, means that even if the animal ate expensive payrus, we figure out the equivalent volume of hay or straw or something like that, or barley or whatever, and the owner pays that, even, vafilo koloyim kule, and Rabbi Yochanan says, even if the animal was wandering around there all day, adjutates of a tass or the das, unless it goes out and then comes back in with the das of the owner. Because once it's with the das of the owner, then that's the shilachas be'iroi. Then he's letting his animal loose and going into somebody else's field. And then, of course, he's chayev for the full hezek. So Rabbi Yochanan, in effect, is saying we consider the whole field as though it was one big plot. We don't make this distinction that Rav Kahana said between one plot and another. And Omer Rapapa, and Rapapa further says about that, Loi Tema Adjutates of Adas, Vatas of Adas. Within Rav Yochanan's opinion, we don't actually mean that the animal has to go out with the owner knowing and even come back in with the owner knowing. El Kivin Shi Yotzal Adas. Once the animal went out and the owner knows about it, then Apapisha Chosra Shaloy Ladas, even if the animal later comes in without him knowing, nevertheless, he would still be chayav the full amount, the full hezek. My timer, the omale, because the reason is because the owner of the garden can tell him, kiven to yalfa, once the animal is used to going in there, once it knows it can go in there and find food, call emas to mishtamta lahosam rata, whenever it gets away from you, it's going to first run over there, so therefore you have an extra responsibility to guard this animal and prevent it from going in. So now the way Rashi phrases it, in other words, that he can say that now it's not enough shmira p'chusa. It sounds like Rashi is saying you need shmira ma'ula for it, which is the Rashba questions that. Does that mean for the rest of the animal's life you need shmira ma'ula for it? So he brings from the Rai, but actually what it means is, in other words, that at least what it means is the owner is going to be responsible to make sure that he doesn't, from now on, that he takes a different route, that when he's taking this animal along, that it takes a different route and doesn't go along the same road over here, because then, yes, all it needs is a moment's inattention, and it's going to run away into that garden. And therefore, a papa is saying, Rabbi Yochanan would say that he's chayav the full hezek in that case. Mephoshim, by the way, deal with the question. We said before, according to Tosfos, at least, we said at the beginning of the sugya that according to Tosfos, the scenario is where the animal couldn't even have gotten in there normally. The only way it could get in there from the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is to fall in. Well, then in that case, then how is there, what are we saying over here? The animal is going to go in there next time. And how's it going to go in? And there are a number of different answers among them after all. I mean, the garden has an opening in some other direction. The owner of the garden himself has to go in and out, so the animal may go and find that, way in and out. But the Maharam Shiv gives an answer. He says, very simple, once the animal is found, there's so much delicious fruit and vegetables over there that it ate last time, it'll even go and throw itself off the Rosh Hashanah again and fall in there again in order to be able to try that again. And therefore, the owner of the garden is going to tell the owner of the animal, you have more responsibility to make sure that the animal is not in a position to be able to do that. Okay. Now, we said, and of course, all of this would only be according to Tosfos, again, according to the Rashba that we said before, who says that, no, it doesn't have to be that the animal could have only fallen in there. It could equally well be that the animal happened to fall in there. But in fact, it could be that equally well it would have been able to walk in there normally. Then, of course, according to him, there's no question in the first place. Next, the Mishnah had said, Yoda Kedarka Vizika, if the animal went down into the garden normally, not falling in, so therefore it's not an onus, Mishalemis, Mashi Zika, then we say you have to pay according to the full hezek of the actual amount, the actual value of what it ate. So, Boyd of Yumi, yes, Rabbi Yumi asks the question, Yoda Kedarka, what if the animal went in there normally, Vizika b'mei leida, but the damage to the paris was done using the birth water. So the animal was pregnant. It went in there, and it gave birth inside the garden. And now the amniotic fluid all came out all over the paris over there and dirtied them and wounded them. So mahu, what's the din? Is the owner of the animal chayev for that nezek? There is some discussion over here, actually, whether in fact it would be Nezek Shalom or whether it maybe only be Chatzi Nezek, because we learned back in the second paragraph about the concept of Tsroris, where something that the animal, for example, pebbles that the animal kicked up, arguably the Mitzvah Esan and then Julian Marashah point out over here that on the face of it, this would be Nezek. This would be Tsroris, and therefore maybe only Chatzi Nezek. The Gilead Marashah gives an answer. He says that maybe we're talking about it's not just the water that broke and landed all over the Paris. Maybe the animal actually rolled around on the Paris, and that's and then therefore it's a direct hezek from the end. Anyway, the question is, Rabbi Yumi is asking, given that the animal giving birth over there in the garden is something kind of unexpected, you know the animal was pregnant, you know it's going to give birth at some point, but not Davka when it happened to go into that garden. So therefore, mahu, what would be the din, is the owner of the animal chayev for the nezakim. So, alibi demando amatchilasi b'pshiyav aseifah ba'onis chayev leitiboylach. According to the opinion which we've discussed before, and which the Gemara discusses again in Bava Metzia, where the beginning was onus and where the beginning was pshia, and the end is onus, then you chayev, then leitiboylach. Then you have no question. Here, the beginning was pshia because he should have been careful to prevent his animal to put up a door, to put up a ruach metzuya, to put up a door that will withstand the animal in under normal conditions and prevent it from going in there. So he was pshia, and therefore he's certainly chayev for the animal going in there. Now you're saying the end was an onus because it's something completely unexpected that the animal gave birth over there. Fine, but according to that opinion, it's philosopher pshia, a safer bonus, then for sure he's going to be chayev because of the initial pshia. The question would only be, what about, according to the opinion, in these various sugyas that talk about that in such a case, a person would be potter, because after all, you have the onus at the end. So now, the question is, so what would be the din? Do we say, after all, look, this is a classic case of philosophy of Shia, because to begin with, he was careless, he didn't put up a strong enough door to keep the animal in, but the so he should be guarding it, and to take extra care of it to make sure that it doesn't go and cause damage with its giving birth. So the Gemara says, Teku, the question is left unresolved. It's not really negeya la halacha, the question, because the halacha is chilasa b'pshiyav, so if about onus chayev, and Rabbi Yirmi had said to begin with that his question is not according to that opinion. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Ketzid Meshalemes Mashe Hizika B'chola. We said, how do you pay according to the Hezek? So in the case where you're paying for the full Hezek, namely, we're saying over here, the animal went in there normally, not it fell in, and it ate, then we said, Meshalemes Mashe Hizika. And then we also had, on Amud Aleph, we had that according to Rav Kahana, you would have, even if it fell in there, if then it went to a different plot and started eating there, then also Meshalemes Mashe Hizika. So how exactly, so Masha Nanis is fairly easy to understand. We figure out the volume of what it ate. We convert that to an equivalent volume of whatever that animal's normal food would eat, would be, such as barley or straw or what have you. And the owner pay, and the owner of the animal pays according to that. As far as Masha Hizika, the Mishnah had said, Shomin base saw ba'osa sada. The Mishnah had said, we evaluate a base saw size, we evaluate a base saw in that land, kama hoisa yofa, how much it was worth before, but kama hi yofa, and how much is it worth now. So Rashi had explained over there like this, that on the Mishnah, what it meant was, you can't just evaluate that particular plot that the animal ate in, because that would be too much of a loss for the mazik, as we're going to discuss now in the Gemara. Because in effect, what it means is you're saying, look, I mean, you're saying the plot with the crops in it is worth a lot more than it would when the crops in it have been damaged. If somebody were to buy that individual plot, he would pay very little for it because of that. We can't do that. That wouldn't be fair to the mazik. So the Mishnah had said, you evaluate a base saw in that field, and you figure out of a total base saw, you figure, in other words, if a person were to buy a base saw, then after all, if there was one particular plot of a few square feet in that base saw is an area of 50 by 50 amas, so about 75 by 75 feet, according to the Rav Chaina, if you have within that an area of a few feet square that's been damaged, the person would pay a little bit less for it, but he wouldn't pay that much less for it. So that would be how we figure Masha Hizika. So now, the Gemara says, we're going to talk about in a few lines exactly how the evaluation is done. But first, we have to figure out, the Gemara says, Minohani Mili, where do we know that we evaluate it that way, that we evaluate it relative to the entire base saw, relative to the entire field, as we're going to go on to talk. Why did we do that? Why don't we just say we figure out the value of this plot, how much it was worth with the crops, how much it's worth without, and pay the difference. So Omer of Masna, the Omer Kro, because the Pasuk says Uvir Bisde Acher. The Pasuk says that the animal goes and damages in another field. Now therefore, from another field, Malamach Hashaman, Agav Sada Acher, from this we learn that you have to evaluate the value of the nezek based on the value of a different field. So in other words, you have a different part of the field that wasn't damaged. That's called Sdei Acher for this purpose. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Hayu Bir Sdei Acher, the Bar Lala Puki Rishos Rabim. What do you mean? The word Sdei Acher we need to teach us, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, as opposed to if the animal eats in Rishos Rabim. Where you don't pay for Shane Verdagel, as we learned previously. So it needs to say Sdei Acher. It needs to say that it eats in somebody else's field to exclude that point. So how can we also use it to learn about how we evaluate the nezek? So the Gemara says in Cain, if that's all it meant, Lichter Rachmano will be a Sdei Chaveiro. Then the Torah could have said that it damages in his fellow man's field. The word Chaveiro, strictly speaking, is Loshen Chachamim. If it was Loshen Torah, it would probably say Re'evu or something like that. But whatever, the point is, it doesn't have to say Acher. It could have said a different word that means his fellow Yid. Inami Sdei Asoda Acher. Or it could have said Uvir Soda Acher without the Beis. So, my Besoda Acher, why instead does it say Besoda Acher? So therefore, Shishamin, Agav Soda Acher, then we can learn also this point that you evaluate the damage based on the value of a different part of the field. Well, the Gemara says, Be'emakula lahochi hudasa. Well, in that case, maybe the Pasuk is only telling us that. Maybe it's not telling us that Shane is Potter in the Shosaradim. So there's then the question, well, then we have the opposite question. Maybe, in fact, you are chayav for Shane in Rosh Hashanah, and the Pasuk of Via Bistachar is only telling us about how you evaluate the damage, like we're saying over here, and then how do we know that you're potter if the animal eats in Rosh Hashanah? And the answer is, in Cain, lift the In that case, then the Torah would have said the words Sada Acher in connection with the payment. When it says at the end of that pasuk, Meitav Sadeu, Meitav Kav Yishalem, B'Sada Acher, then the Torah would have written it when it says he has to pay out of the best of his field or the best of his vineyard, he should pay in another field. And then we would understand that it means that you evaluate the damage based on another field. Instead, why does the Torah write it in connection with the word ovir, shmamina tauti, therefore, meant to understand that you can learn both dinim from it. Number one, that you're potter in the shosar abim, because that's not soda acher. And number two, that when it comes to evaluating the damage, you evaluate according to soda acher, and not that you, because again, the extra phrasing in the posse, because it could have said sdei chaveroi, or it could have said bisdei chaveroi, or it could have said soda acher, and instead it says bisdei acher, so therefore we also learn as far as the evaluation of the damage. Okay, so now
the question is, would have obviously implied it from the fact that it's not a private field. Why did we need for that?
Well, no, because it is. No, think of it. For example, you're chayav for Keren in Rosh Hashanah Abim. Why shouldn't you be chayav for Shane in Rosh Hashanah Abim? The pasuk needs to tell you that you're not. The fact is, you're chayav for Masha Nenes, as we've learned before, but you're not chayav for Masha Hizika when the animal eats in Rosh Hashanah Abim. Why is that? Because the pasuk says the Sada Achim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Hey, Pishenian, how exactly do we evaluate the value of the damage relative to the field?" The point of the question is, so Rashi explains as follows: the problem is the Mishnah had told us that you evaluate according to a base saw. The problem is though that when it comes to a base saw, it's a relatively small plot of land. It's only a base saw, like we said, is only 50 by 50 amas, around 75 by 75 feet. It's not really enough to use as much of a farm. The only one who would buy such a thing is a poor person, and therefore, so therefore, it ends up getting sold for more than it would actually be worth. In other words, if you had a person a person might buy several base saws at once, and that would be a more reasonable purchase. And since there's a greater supply of such fields, and there's a greater demand for such fields, then therefore, then the price gets more equable. But when you're talking about selling, similar in a way, I guess you could think of it similarly to the way you have certain things that are sold in standard sizes, and when you want a non-standard one, then it costs extra. So the same way over here, a base saw is kind of a non-standard size of a field to sell. So it wouldn't be just enough to say we have to calculate the value of a base saw. We first have to figure out what is the fair value of a base saw, but after all, it's not only a base saw by itself, it's part of a much larger field. That's according to Rashi. We'll talk soon that Tosfos has a much different explanation of it. But anyway, so first, the Gemara says, according to Rashi, Amar Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, Rabbi Yosef of Chanina says we have to figure one saw among 60 saw, meaning, in other words, that then you divide that by 60 to get what's considered to be the fair market value of that one saw. Meaning, in other words, let's say, for example, the entire 60 base saw, let's say, would sell for $6,000. Now, it doesn't work. You wouldn't say if you were offering one base saw in it, it wouldn't be exactly 160. If it wouldn't be exactly 100, Rashi is pointing out, you would end up charging more for it because it's a non-standard size. You might end up getting 110 for it. So what we do is the first evaluation. Then we do is we figure out what would be the value of 1/60th of 60 base saw. So 60 base saw in this particular area and type of soil and whatever would sell, let's say, for $6,000. So therefore, we prorate and we say each base saw is worth 100. Then within that itself, we figure out, within that base saw, we have here one particular plot that was damaged of X number of square feet. So then we figure out how much does that reduce the value of that one individual base saw. So we do a double evaluation, basically. So first evaluating the base saw as a whole, and then within that base saw, how much has its value been reduced by the damage to that flaw? And the point of that is that the point is it actually points out that the reason why we're mentioning a base saw in this connection, if we started, if we only did the evaluation, if we only said we're going to figure the damaged area relative to 60 base saw, then it would come out the mazik would be paying nothing or next to nothing, because how much are you going to notice a little bit of damage in an entire field of 60 saw? So that's why we first need to figure out the value of one base saw, where within one base saw, that damaged area will be more noticeable. But first, we have to figure out the fair value of that one base saw, not when it's sold by itself, but rather when it's sold as part of a larger plot of 60. So that's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos has a bunch of questions on Rashi's explanation. It doesn't fit with the with the wording of the Mishnah. It doesn't seem to fit with the explanation of the Gemara. And Tosfos has a half a dozen questions on Rashi's explanation. So they explain that no, what it means is when we say over here evaluating a base saw, the Mishnah had used the word base saw, but Tosfos explains, unlike Rashi, that a base saw means an area of the field in which you can plant a saw, which is the usual meaning of it. A base saw usually means an area in which you could plant a saw of grain, which is defined as 50 by 50 amos. Rather, Tosfos says what it means is we figure out here the animal ate a saw of grain, so we figure out, or whatever it is that it ate, so we figure out how much would a saw of grain from that field be worth within the entire within the entire field. So in other words, what we do is so we figure out, in other words, this field had had many saw of grain in it. Now it's lacking one saw. So how much does that reduce? How much does that reduce its value? So according to them, you don't have this double evaluation. According to them, you just evaluate the amount that the animal ate relative to the entire value of the field. Agoris HaGrub brings over here a third explanation from the Ravid that says that what Rabbi Yossi, that what Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina's explanation of the Mishnah means that if the animal had eaten less than a saw, you wouldn't do this kind of evaluation at all. You would only figure out the value of what it actually ate, and you would go from there. Only if it ate a saw or more, then you would start doing this evaluation relative to the rest of the field. Anyway, that's Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina. Rabbi Yana, I'm a tarkov of the Shishin Tarkovim. Rabbi Yana says you evaluate one tarkov relative to 60 tarkovim. A tarkov is a measurement equal to half a saw. So according to him, you're not doing the evaluation of a full saw relative to 60, but rather you're doing half a saw relative to 60 half sin, which means basically one saw to 30. But he wants to still use the figure 60, like we said previously, he's just putting it in terms of a tarkov. So again, according to Rashi, it would mean we do a similar kind of thing. According to Rashi, it means, in other words, that instead of figuring a total area of 60 saw, we're figuring a total area of only 30. Because otherwise, he says, it's too much of a loss for the nizek. Because on the contrary, Rav Yana is saying, it might be very hard to find somebody who would buy full 60 saw. That's a rather large field. So therefore, Rav Yana reduces it to 30, which is a more likely size field that somebody is likely to buy. According to Tosfos, the vote would be that we're saying that according to Rashi again, we're according to Rav Yana, we're doing the double evaluation. First, one tarkov relative to 30 saw, which is also 1/60, and then within that, we're figuring out how much has this area of a tarkov been reduced in value by the amount that the animal ate. According to Tosfos, again, we don't have the double evaluation. It means the idea that that he says instead of trying to evaluate a full 60 saw, where it's not going to be very noticeable, then you evaluate it in 30, and that's going to in 30 saw, and that's going to be much more noticeable. According to the Ravid, the vote would be that a tarkov, according to him, is the minimum value where we're going to start doing such evaluations. Whereas if it was any less than a tarkov that it ate half a saw, then instead we would just figure out the actual value of it. So that's according to, so that's according to the Gamai. Where are we getting the 60 from, by the way? Before you should wonder, why are we saying that was 60? Then Amram says, listen, you know, we find many times that 60 is the shear for bittul and for other such things, and therefore the Chachamim chose it for this purpose as well. Chizkiya says that you evaluate each stalk relative to 60 stalks, meaning, in other words, that you just figure the value, how much, and you would take 60 times the value that it ate and evaluate relative to that. So even according to Rashi, Chizkiya is not saying that you do this double evaluation. According to Rashi, Chizkiya is disagreeing with the other two Amiroyim and saying that you only do the evaluation. That you only do the single evaluation. According to Tosfos, Chizkiya is not disagreeing on that with the other Chachamim. They all agree that you only do the single evaluation. The difference is, according to him, that you're not evaluating the entire field, just an area, just that you're evaluating an area 60 times what it ate and figuring out and prorating based on that. According to the Ravid, the vote would be that Chizkiya is saying there's no minimum amount that the animal has to have eaten for us to apply different rules. The rule is always going to be relative to 60, no matter how much it is. Okay, so Gemara says Mesi. The Gemara says I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Ochla kavoy kabayim, if the animal ate one or two kavim, there are six kavim to a saw, so one or two kavim is less than the amount that that Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina mentioned, and also less than the amount that that Rabbi Yana mentioned. Ain oimit shalom mehem, you don't say that you pay the full value of how much a kav or two kavim of this particular produce would be worth. You figure as though it was a small plot of land, and then you evaluate it. So my lab of Hansma, doesn't that mean that you evaluate it by itself? So that would contradict all three of the Amiroyim who we said over here that who say that you're evaluating it relative to other ones. And the answer is Lloyd Bashishim. No, the Braisa means that you evaluate it relative to 60. So it still fits with any of the three of those with any of the three Amiroyim. Okay. The Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. The reason behind this is like this. Ein shomin kav. We can't evaluate a kav by itself that it ate. Mipnei shemash bichoy, because then it... That, well, how much is 60 kav of this produce worth? And then we're going to divide it by 1/60th. The problem is meshmash viach mazik, because then the mazik is gaining too much from that. Because, again, an area of 60 kavim is an area, so an area of 60 kavim is going to be too, it's too big for a poor person. And on the other hand, Rashi points out, a person who has lots of nechasim and wants to buy land is going to overpay for such a thing. I'm looking up the wrong Rashi. The problem is that 60 kavim, again, you're going to find a hard time to buy it. You're going to find a hard time finding a buyer for it. For a poor person, an area of 60 kavim is too much. Since there are 6 kavim to a saw, an area of 60 kavim is an area of 10 saw. That's more than a poor person is going to buy. On the other hand, an average or even certainly a rich person is not going to buy such a small area. So that's one problem. The other problem is that you're not really going to notice among 60 kavim, you're not going to notice a one missing kavim. So therefore, for both of those reasons, therefore the mazik is going to end up gaining too much if you evaluate the kav relative to 60. For loy kur v'shishim kurim, on the other hand, if you don't evaluate the entire kur, if the animal ate a quart of grain, you're not going to figure relative to 60 kurim, but they should pogim mazik. Because then the mazik loses out too much. Because there, what you have is a person who wants to buy a lot of property he sees an area of 60 kur, which is available for sale. A base kur by itself is an area of 75,000 square amos, which is around 400 by 400 feet. 60 times that is quite a large area of property. A rich person would be willing to overpay even to get such a nice amount of property to add to what he has already. So therefore, so you'd end up overpaying for it, and then therefore, if we figured 1/60th of that, then we'd be charging the mazik too much. And also, the difference is, another difference is, again, that the difference of a kor that's been, an area of a kor that's been damaged, again, a kor being quite a large area, it's going to be very noticeable, and therefore, so now also, then we're going to end up evaluating the value of that missing part too high, and then the mazik is going to lose out. So therefore, that's why, so the Papa is saying, therefore, what the Braisa is saying is that we can't, that's why the Mishnah had used the expression that we evaluate based on a sub. Because a saw relative to 60 cm is a much more, is an intermediate kind of thing. An area of 60 saw is more of an area where you're likely to find lots of buyers for it, and where on the other hand, the area of one saw in it that's damaged is not so large enough as to be noticeable, and therefore that makes that equalizes things and makes it more fair for the mazik. But the Gemara says, Maski thought of Hunabah Manoyach, but Hunabah Manoyach asks on that. Hai Veloy Base Kur. In that case, why is the Mishnah using the expression, not a base Kur, Veloy Kur mi Barilei? In that case, then the Mishnah should have, then the Braisa rather, so the Braisa began by saying that we don't evaluate a Kav, but, and then it said we don't evaluate a base Kur. If both parts of the Braisa are saying that we don't evaluate the actual amount that the animal ate relative to 60 times that, we evaluate always relative to a saw, then since the Braisa began with calf, it should have continued with kur. Why all of a sudden does it say base kur, which means an area of a kur? Rather, what the Braisa means is, ein shaman calf b'fnei atzmai, we don't figure out the value of the calf by itself, and just say, well, a cab of this kind of produce is worth X amount, therefore you should pay X amount, because then the nizik gains too much from that. On the other hand, we don't compare the cab to a base kur, where there are 180 cab to a base kur, because that would make the nizik lose out too much, because one relative to 180 is going to make very little of a difference. Ela b'shishim, rather we evaluate according to 60, where there that balances out things and makes it that then the difference is going to be noticeable, but not so unusually noticeable that the mazik will lose out a large amount. So the Braisa is saying the same thing as we've been saying all this time, that it means that we evaluate based on 60. So the Gemara tells another case in this connection. Hahu gavra tekotz kashva mechavre. There was a person who chopped down somebody else's palm tree. The word kashva over here, Rashi explains, means a palm tree, and Tosfos points out usually in another place in the Gemara we find what the word kashva seems to mean something else. So Tosfos explains there may be different kinds of palm trees. That's the one particular kind is called kashva. In fact, he brings from the Aruch that a kashva is what the Gemara is soon going to call dikla parsa, a Persian palm tree, where we're going to talk about as a better quality palm tree than average. Anyway, one person had cut down a kashva, a palm tree, or a particular good quality palm tree that belonged to somebody else. Also, the kameh de Reish Galusa. So the owner of the tree came to the Reish Galusa for a din turtle. Omale, the Reish Galusa was the governor of the Yidden of Bavel in those times. He was considered an official government official in charge of Jewish matters in the country, and he had a base din of his own, and people would go to him for dinei Torah. So the Reish Galusa says, Lididi Chozili, I personally saw the area where that palm tree was growing. There were three palm trees over there in a row. The three palm trees planted together, the total value of the three palm trees together was 100 zuz. So therefore, that means each one is 33 and change. Zil havlei tlos in the tlos or a tilde. So he tells the one who chopped down the tree, go pay him 33 and one-third zuz, one-third of the total. So he's not doing the shishim like what we had said until now. The Rosh explains, the Reish Galusa's Svara, that he figured that only applies to incompletely ripened produce, but here a tree by itself is something where a tree where you could always you could always uproot it from one place and replant it someplace else. So the Reish Lakish figured that different dinim apply to it. There is a very interesting point in this connection that that Achronim talk about. Sometimes you have, sometimes you have a set of things where taking one thing out of a set reduces the rest, the value of the rest of the set. An example, let's give an example that posts from Achronim talk about. Imagine a person has a set of chumashim, and one person goes and somebody goes and damages one of the five chumashim. The other four chumashim are worth less now because who's going to buy four chumashim? So does that mean that maybe the mazik should have to pay more than just the value of the individual chumash because he also reduced the value of the other ones? So they say here you have a proof to the contrary because here the Reish Galus is saying you have the three trees were planted together, which means that like each one helps increase the value of the other one. Like, or if a person were to buy trees, he would be more likely to want to buy a group of them together rather than one individual one. And yet, the Reish Galus is saying that we calculate the value of each one individually. Anyway, the Mazik says, "Gabi Reish Galus to doin dinah de parsa lamali." What do I need with a Reish Galus who is going to judge the way the Persians do? With meaning, in other words, not judging according to din Torah. Now we did just say that the Aruch explained that the palm tree over here was a Persian palm tree. So Tosfos actually brings from the Tosfos actually brings that it means that the guy is saying that not like the Aruch. This wasn't a Persian palm tree that I chopped down. It was an ordinary one, which is not worth so much. And yet this Reish Galus is treating it as though it was a Persian palm tree and making me pay much more than it's worth. So let me not bother with him. Also, came to Rav Nachman, so he came to Rav Nachman for a din Torah. Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, "B'shishim, yes." Abaya the Rava. So Abaya says to Rava, so what are you thinking? The Nizke Gufoy Mai Daita. So what are you thinking? That when it comes to Nizke Gufoy, when he himself caused the damage, you're thinking that you shouldn't evaluate based on 60 and you should always pay the full value. Where are you getting that from? Mai Daita. Where are you thinking to get that from? Maybe the Tanya, because it says in a Braisa, Hamavkir Kamei Shachaveroi, if a person damages the crops in somebody else's vineyard, Hamavku is Moshin Bikurim, so it means the pasture that he cuts away and damages the early ripening fruit of there. Anyway, Smodar, Hamavku Kamer Shachaver is Smodar, so he damaged somebody else's vineyard when the grapes are still Smodar, which is a very early stage of their development when they're just blossoming. Roy and Oise Kama Hoise Yofa Vakamahi Yofa La Achamikan. Then we figure out the value of how much it was worth beforehand and how much it's worth afterwards. And the Iva Bashishim Lekotani, and the Braisa doesn't say anything about evaluating based on 60 times as much and then prorating. So therefore you, Rava, are trying to learn from that that's a difference between whether he himself did the damage or whether his animal or other mammon did that. The question with that is, Abaya says you can't learn from the Braisa that way. Don't you have exactly the same expression that it uses in a Braisa about somebody's animal causing damage, where also it doesn't mention 60, and nevertheless, based on everything we learned so far, we know that there is 60 involved. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, if a person's animal kitma cut and destroyed natia, a young tree. So how much does the owner have to pay? Rabbi Yossi Omer, Gozre Gzeris Shav Yerushalayim Omrim, the people who made Gzeris in Yerushalayim, we learned a while back at the end of Ksuvos that there were two or three Dayanim there in Yerushalayim named Chonon and Admon. And they were called Dayonic Zelus and also Dayonic Zeros, and they were the ones who figured out. So they said, when the tree is within its first year, then the owner of the animal has to pay two silver coins for the tree that his animal destroyed. And if the tree is 2 years old, then you have to pay four silver coins. These are, These are, Tosfos Sabino Peretz points out, these are the minimums. There may be more than that, but these are the absolute minimums that he would have to pay. You have to keep in mind, of course, the fruit, the tree during its first few years is not producing fruit, and even if it was producing fruit, it would be orla and really osabana, so we can't really evaluate the value of the fruit that the animal damaged. All we can do is evaluate the value of the tree, and so the Gozer Xeris figured out these amounts, 2 and 4 respectively. And the Braisa continues, ochlochozis, what happened if the animal goes and eats, and eats unripe grain? Chozis, also Rashi calls it another name, it's called shachas, is a stage where the grain, where the stalks of grain have grown, but the seeds, the actual grains have not grown yet, or at least are very unripe. So at that point, you could conceivably cut it and use it as animal food. So now, what happens? An animal went in there and ate the stalks while they're in this chozis stage. So Rabbi Yosef Aglili Omer, Nidin, B'meshuyo Shaboy, Rabbi Yosef Aglili says, you have to figure out the value of it relative to everything that was left in the field, meaning, in other words, you're going to have to look at, when it comes harvest time, how much is the rest of the grain worth? In other words, as the Gemara is going to point out soon, you could have a case, let's say, where later on in the season, the rest of the crop gets damaged by a wind or by a hail or by who knows what or whatever. Well, then you can't hold the person whose animal ate the chozis responsible for the value of it, because he can say, look, even if my animal hadn't eaten it, you wouldn't have gotten a crop out of this anyway. So Rabbi Yosi Aglili is saying, you have to wait until the harvest and then figure out on that basis how much the mazik would have to pay. The Chum say you don't wait until the harvest. You just figure out how much would the ground have been, how much would that land have been worth to sell now when it had the shachas in it, versus how much would have been beforehand, before the animal came in there, versus afterwards, and then you pay accordingly. Now, so far, the Mishnah is not saying anything. The Braisa is not saying anything about 60. So the point is, in other words, Abaya is saying to Rava, the same way as over here, it doesn't say anything about 60, and yet we know that with animals you do 60, the same way with a person, the same way with this guy who chopped down the other guy's palm tree, just because the Braisa doesn't say 60 doesn't mean that you don't evaluate based on 60. So where are you getting from the challenge of Nachman and say that it should be based on 60? But first, let's finish with the rest of the Braisa. Ochlos smadar, the Braisa continues, if the animal ate grapes that were smadar, where again, is a very early stage of their development. So the same kind of machlokas. Rabbi Yeshua, Omer, Royin, Osim, Kilein, Anovim, Omnisli, Botzer. Rabbi Yeshua says you consider as though they were grapes that are already ready to be harvested, and he has to pay accordingly. Now, the meaning, in other words, Rabbi Yeshua is saying, not like Rabbi Yosef Aglili, that we have to look at how the crop ends up. Rabbi Yeshua would say that when it comes, the point is, Tosfos says, the difference is, when it comes to grain, usually if the grain is going to get damaged by some kind of adverse weather or whatever, usually all of it is going to be damaged at once. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef really has reason to say that you should evaluate relative to the condition of the entire field. With grapes, it's not like that. Many times you can have some grapes come out badly and others come out good. So therefore, you can't say, therefore, Rabbi Yeshua is not saying that you go according to the rest of the field. That's one reason why Tosfos says why to draw that distinction. Another point, Tosfos says maybe the Chacham didn't penalize him with grain so much as they do with grapes. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yeshua says you have to consider them as though they're ready to harvest grapes, and he has to pay a point to that. And the Chum say no. Again, Royin Kamahosi Yafa Kamahi Yafa. The Chum say you have to figure out how much would this vineyard have been worth before the animal ate the grapes, and how much it's worth now, and then you pay the difference. Rashi makes the point over here again that this means the Chachamim are being makel against Rabbi Yeshua because Rabbi Yeshua would have said you have to pay according to the full value of it. Then the Braisa continues. Rav Shimon and Yehuda Omer Meshum Rav Shimon. Bamed Varam Amurim. When is all this talking about that you figure out the Chachamim are saying that you figure out the value of the land and how much it was worth with these unripe grapes versus without them? Rav Shimon and Yehuda says, but that when would that be? Bizman Shachla Lulavei Gufanin. Only if the animal ate the young shoots of the grapevine, the little tips, the things that grow on the tips of the branches from which the branches later on develop, the chure to aid him, or if it ate, or if it ate the, similarly with figs, you have the initial shoots of the figs so there you have. In other words, it actually explains that you have, the point we're talking about is you have the clusters of grapes. You start having, there's a cluster there, but you don't actually have the grapes on it are not developed yet. And the same thing with figs, the same stage is called yichur. Avo ocho pagim, but Reb Shimon Yehuda says in the name of Reb Shimon, if the animal had eaten pagim, which is figs at a more ripe stage, so they're not completely ripe yet, but they're further along. Oy boiser, or in the case of grapes, that equivalent stage is called boiser. Rashi explains that based on Mishnayos and Seder Zeroyim, boiser in connection with grapes is when they get to be the at the very early stage of smadar, you already consider them as though they were fully ripe. Reb Shimon Yehuda is saying no, only when they reach the stage of boiser. The Chachamim are saying, regardless, then you always count them relative to the karka rather than independent. Anyway, the point is, the point is, the Chachamim are saying that you figure out how much was the field worth before and how much is it worth now. The Braisa didn't say anything about 60. And yet, we know by animals that you evaluate based on 60. So obviously, you have to say, even though it didn't mention that point, the Chachamim still mean that's how you evaluate it. Not the value of this individual plot in the vineyard, but rather by an area of 60 saw, like we said before. Chachamim, b'shishim, the same way, when it comes to a person causing nezik by himself, that... And also, we have to evaluate based on 60, like Reb Nachman says, you're saying, and Braisa says before, and it didn't mention 60, so what? This last Braisa that we brought also doesn't mention that, and yet we do that, so yes, you always figure out relative to 60, whether it was the animal that caused the damage, or whether it was a person who personally caused the damage, in this case, by chopping down somebody else's tree. We'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, analyzing this machlokas more about how we evaluate when the animal ate unripe grapes, and then we'll continue talking about this matter of evaluating based on 60.
Shkayach.